previously on the Steve Cochran Show.
Who has a puck in their pants for Chicago Blackhawk tickets? It's a Chicago legend. It's a suburban native. Went to the University of Illinois, started their professional career in Canada, had a short acting career. Hamp, this one's for you.
Hi, I'm Ed Obradovich, and I have a puck in my pants.
I gotta have that on a loop for my cell phone.
Live from downtown Chicago, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
511 720 WGN. Good morning. Happy Monday to you. It's with a very heavy heart we kick off the show today. Our thoughts and prayers remain with Paris. Paris still remains on edge in the wake of Friday's terror attacks as authorities now have arrested seven people and they continue their international manhunt for an eighth man they believe was involved in these horrendous attacks. ABC's Tom Rivers has been in Paris since all of this happened. Tom, I've been following you on Twitter and Facebook and your harrowing and heartwarming pictures of everybody coming to light candles and leave flowers near the Arc de Triomphe and throughout Paris as well.
Yeah. Hey, we just dropped out here, but I just caught the very end of that. It's been a very emotional weekend, as you can well imagine here in Paris, and the people having to go to work today. But, you know, they can't put it behind them either. So you got on the one hand, their hearts are still aching, but two, they got to get to A to B to go to work and life will go on. Same thing we went through in January. And, you know, many of the people I talked to over the weekend as well said, you know, Tom, we got the resolve. We've got the backbone. We will not be cowed. But they say, look, there could well be a third wave somewhere down the road.
Yeah, and Parisians are so strong, and the support all over the world, even that, you know, as I was saying on Facebook with everybody changing their pictures to the red, white, and blue, to the skyline, the Sydney Opera House, I mean, all over the red, white, and blue is just being displayed to show Paris, well, we support you.
Yeah, it's hands across the sea, and it's funny, I was talking to one lovely lady yesterday, and she brought her daughters out to the Place de la République to lay flowers and light candles. And she said exactly, she said, this is our 9/11. And, you know, our hearts went out to the U.S. And we understand that their hearts go out to us now. And it's very, very emotional. And you can cut it with a knife still.
Tom, I know emotions are obviously so high, it's so fresh, but are there people walking through the streets? Is there security everywhere? I know they had closed the Louvre and the Eiffel Tower. Mm-hmm. Everything's still closed.
Well, no, they're supposed to reopen today.
Today, okay.
And we just had a minute silence, so maybe those things will open up. I don't know if you heard about this one, but yesterday, again, I was out in Republic Square, when firecrackers went off, and it was pandemonium for about 1 minute because there was a few thousand people out there in the evening at that time, and everybody was ducking for cover. And you're absolutely right. The police presence, very, very heavy. A lot of police soldiers with semi-automatic weapons all kind of trained in the same one direction. Very, very tense. It just shows you that not too far from the surface, people are still worried and concerned, and they think that, you know, maybe not everybody has been apprehended at this stage of the game, and people are still keeping their guard up.
Yeah, and they're still learning more. I mean, there's been so many details that have emerged since Friday with regard to some of the men were finding out who planned the attack. They identified one by fingerprints at the concert hall. He had another had a Syrian passport by him. So we're starting to learn more about the those behind this terror plot.
Yeah, we can really get into the nitty-gritty of this, but I guess the broad stroke is at this stage, it looks like a lot of this was planned across the border in Belgium. The weapons and explosives procured, put together there, out of the gaze of the French authorities. So very, very sneaky move. But they then moved over into Paris and did what they did Friday night. And again, catching the French authorities unaware. And can you imagine if you are a police dispatcher and you now have six horrific, deadly incidents going on at the same time? It was complex. It was very well thought out, very well planned and executed. It was something that would be one incident would be enough, let alone six.
Absolutely. And we're going to be learning more about the terror plot that was hatched as well. Tom, thank you so much, and be safe as always.
All righty. Take care.
Okay, you bet. We'll touch base with you in the coming hours, in the coming days as well. ABC's Tom Rivers has been in Paris since all of this happened. 129 people dead, hundreds more remain injured, and as I said, much more on Paris throughout the show and throughout the day as well. 5:15 now, let's get a check of traffic. It's 5:20 in the morning, 7:20 WGN. We're going to check in with Aaron Katursky a little later on in the program as well. He, too, is in Paris. Wanted to add one more thing that, of course, France is continuing to launch those anti-terrorism raids against ISIS strongholds in Syria. Those airstrikes began less than 48 hours after the French attacks happened. And they began actually coordinating anti-terror raids across the entire country very, very early this morning, which would have been yesterday, their time, including in Toulouse as well. 20 police vehicles were seen in raids on the French-Belgian border town of Jemont, while homes were also searched in several Paris suburbs overnight. And on Sunday, we learned as well that the French were questioning the brother of one of the suspected terrorists, the one suspected of being killed in the concert hall, that attack. And he said that he had not seen his brother since his brother relocated to Algeria several years ago. So family members now all being questioned of the suspected terrorists. And now we go live to the great Steve Cochran. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Obviously, we're going to talk a bunch about the situation in Paris today. We're trying to find some new information and new ways to discuss it, because I don't know about you guys, but if you got inundated with it all weekend, at some point you have to walk away. It's just too sad and too hard. But we've got a lot of other stuff to cover as well, along with our own security. We'll talk about the security of the Chicago Bears. Wait a minute. Wait for it. Playoff hopes?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
What? What?
Gasp.
What? Somebody check out Obradovich's blood pressure. As Dave just said, the Hawks won. Northwestern, nice start for the basketball team. Beat Purdue on the football field. How did Illinois do?
Oh, you got to bring it up. They got pummeled by Ohio State.
I literally don't know.
Pummeled. What was it? They didn't even score a touchdown.
It wasn't 28-3. Pummeling.
28-3. But
that's
you know
a
what?
Pretty good team they played.
Steve, since I'm glass half full, they did a beautiful ceremony for veterans and a moment of silence for Paris. But beautiful Veterans Day tribute at the University of Illinois on Saturday.
Listen, if you can't play football, do a tribute.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's all fine.
Yeah.
And it looks like, I hate to break it to everybody, it looks like winter apparently is going to come. Starting with monsoons this week.
Yeah.
The rain forecast for Wednesday, I think, is just, I believe it's grab a boat. So it's going to be a lot of rain this week. But somehow we'll get through it together. By the way, I'm taking a couple of days off this week. I'm going to be off Wednesday and Friday. It's the traditional Wednesday-Friday 7-10 split.
which we're going to miss you, of course, but why not 3 days in a row or five?
Well, it's just because, and I mean, it's Thursday, we do the political roundtable thing, and I think there's going to be a lot of important stuff to talk about. So I'm coming in Thursday mostly for that. Maybe I'll just come in for the 7 o'clock hour.
Don't you want to just, I thought you were coming in for me and Dave and Mary and Kevin.
I'm coming for you. Yeah, right, that.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Come on, get serious. So it's going to be a busy week. We're glad you listened, and we appreciate the support. And I'm about to step into our elevator, so I'll see you in a couple of seconds.
You got it. There's the great Steve Cochran. He will join us momentarily on the show. Bears win. Bears two in a row, and Packers, you can't help but be giddy if you're a Bear fan. Three losses in a row. For the Packers, and they're calling it to what Nick affectionately referred to as the Ditka curse. I love it.
Oh, because of the McDonald's.
Because of the McDonald's.
Yeah, he puts on the Packers sweater.
Ever since he put on the Packers sweater, the Packers have not won.
And sorry, Orion.
Somewhere the coach is laughing.
Oh, that's okay. We'll have our day.
The glee in the air. What is wrong with, I mean, the Packers, this is the team that everybody, and they still might, who knows, win the Super Bowl, but this was the team at the start of the year. Everybody said, they were 6-0,
and now they're, they're suddenly, you know, they're looking up at three other teams, including one of them in the NFC North, the Minnesota Vikings, mm-hmm. who've surprised everybody. They're 7-2. Packers are a game behind them. But in terms of the
road to the Super Bowl going through Lambeau Field? Not anymore. Mm-mm. Carolina's 9-0. Arizona won last night. They're also at 7-2 along with Minnesota. So, I mean, it's a long way to go. We're just past the halfway mark of the season. But they got some problems in Green Bay. There's no question.
Big time. Big time. Again, can't help but giggle just a little bit. Speaking of Bears, is Matt Forte coming back anytime soon?
Yeah, probably, although Jeremy Langford looked pretty darn good yesterday.
He was great.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, again, during the week, he'll be day-to-day. And we'll ask Adam Hoge. He's going to join us at 6:20. Maybe he'll be back for Sunday against Denver, because it didn't sound like this was going to be a long-term thing. It sounded like a couple of games. But in the meantime, the guys who filled in, although I have to tell you, the St. Louis Rams were awful. Mm-hmm. They were terrible. Mm-hmm. And not to take anything away from what the Bears did, because the Bears had a lot to do with that. But I was really surprised to see how poorly St. Louis played defensively, how they couldn't block the Bears. There was a holding call in seemingly every play. And they were just
seemingly the same guy.
They couldn't complete a pass. They have one of the best young running backs in football, Todd Gurley. The Bears made him a non-factor, and the Rams made him a non-factor in that game. I was really shocked at their level of ineptitude.
Do they not return punts?
Ever?
I mean, seriously.
Well, first you have to force a team to punt.
Yeah. Well, okay, true.
Right?
True. Well, do they not return kickoffs?
Gold was blasting him into the end zone, and let's face it, most of the time you're going to just take the touchback.
Oh yeah. Illinois, by the way, had no problem punting on Saturday. No problem turning over the ball, no problem not doing anything. So I would say
you were down
there.
You were in Champaign, right?
But what a beautiful Veterans Day tribute it was. That was the positive. Oh, and I ran into some old friends, too.
Oh, good.
See, it was a nice day.
And it was a beautiful day, Mary. Yeah. The sun was shining.
And you'll have a chance, because Illinois plays a week from Saturday at Soldier Field against Northwestern.
That's right.
So you'll have a chance
game.
To see him again.
Go, Mary, I'm trying to convince you to go to that game with me.
Oh, I'll be in Wisconsin. Hopefully I'll be back in time. We still don't know the time of that game, right?
Yeah,
no,
Dave, what's the deal?
I think we'll either find out today or next Sunday, that depending how the –
Why did they do that? I mean, how do people make plans?
Because of television.
Oh, yeah, TV. Man. By the way, Dave, if you can make it a 1 o'clock start, that would be so much
more convenient.
No, make
it night.
Convenient.
Night would be better for me.
It won't be 1 o'clock. It won't be at night. I can tell you
that. It's going to be 11
o'clock. It'll be 11 or 2:30.
Oh, I won't make it.
It's always 11 or 2:30.
We'll keep you posted. We should find that out today.
$5.50 in the morning. Nick's here. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? You know, you didn't have to tell people that your headphones were not plugged in. You could have just not said anything.
I think it's funnier.
It was funnier.
Tell the truth.
No, I mean, it was
tell
funnier.
The truth. the television industry in particular has responded to the attacks in Paris appropriately and have canceled a bunch of episodes that were scheduled for tonight that had terrorism themes tonight and this week. Like, for instance, the new episode of Supergirl.
Right.
And some others. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer, and it seems obvious, but it isn't always, and there has to be meetings where people wring their hands, but, you just can't show stuff like that. And there's a movie, and I don't know if you know the name of it, because I don't, but there's a movie in Paris that was shot in Paris that was supposed to open in January, which is the story of a group of terrorists who I believe take over the train system there. And it got pushed back in January because of the Charlie Hebdo attacks. It was scheduled to open this weekend.
Are you kidding?
Is it called Made in France?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah.
And wow.
So maybe at some point, if you believe in the God of all movies, he goes, I don't want this movie out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's my suggestion to the producers. Don't pick any more dates. To release the movie, please.
Right.
So,
what did you see this weekend?
I saw three movies, two of which were
is that an average weekend?
Below average sometimes.
That's unbelievable.
Well, like this week, the one that I missed that I wanted to see, I didn't have.
Are you a vampire? How much time do you spend in the dark?
All of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What movie didn't you want to see?
That I wanted to see that I just didn't, I couldn't get to was Trumbo. That was the only one.
Oh, yeah.
Of the like, and then
Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston as Dalton Trumbo.
Yeah.
But between myself and Eric and Colin, we want to make sure that we have everything covered for the movie review segment.
Sure.
You know. So, but I didn't see Love the Coopers. Colin was stuck with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was the big
Diane
ensemble
Keaton,
cast.
Yeah. That's the movie where Diane Keaton,
John Goodman,
Diane Keaton plays Alan Arkin's daughter.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Diane Keaton
what?
Plays Alan Arkin's daughter.
Isn't she older?
No, she's not older. But she's
she
would have been about
5 years younger.
He would have been about 11, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, how do they think that works?
Don't know.
What a
John Goodman plays her husband, and they have Marissa Tomei plays her sister.
What?
I'm not kidding.
Wait, she plays Diane Keaton's sister?
Yes.
Oh, come on. What
Kevin,
Diane Keaton is 70? 69,
Kevin
70?
And Andre, split this up. Give me some ages on these people.
Right.
Guess is Diane Keaton's 65.
69. Alan Arkin's 81.
Okay.
12 years.
12. He would have been 12.
It's physically possible, but it's not likely.
Marissa
what about
Tomei,
Marissa
I'm going to say 49.
She's
I'm going to say 49.
50.
She's 50?
And they look so much alike.
And so she would be Diane Keaton's sister, even though she's 18 years younger.
Right.
And what was the other one you mentioned?
John Goodman.
Goodman's
like 55, 60?
Yeah.
He's 63.
John Goodman's 63?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so Diane Keaton was robbing the cradle there a little bit.
Well, why not? Her father's only 12 years older than she is.
I tell you, the morality of that family.
It's crazy. That's what the movie's about, by the way.
The fact that the 12-year-old father. Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, sure.
It's a lovely family film.
I assume it's just another Christmas movie?
No, it's crap. but let me tell you what I saw. I saw The 33, which I thought was unremarkable.
Yeah, it didn't get great ratings.
It wasn't very good. But I did see two remarkable movies. Two movies that will be very near the top of my list.
Okay.
Lovely movie called Brooklyn, which stars Saoirse Ronan, great Irish actress, a little girl who was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Coming of age film. I love someone in Brooklyn and I love someone in Ireland.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, story of my life.
I know. it's an absolutely beautiful film.
Okay.
Really beautiful. And the other one is as good as everyone is saying it is. Believe the Hype.
First Spotlight.
It is an astoundingly good movie. And it is hard to watch. It is really the best movie about journalism since All the President's Men. At times, but it's really...
It's about the story, right?
It's about the story. It's about... You know what it is? It's about journalism. And it's about... You know, I mean, the events in this movie took place, or the events that they were covering at that time, that this group of journalists, it took place 14 years ago, but it feels like forever.
Well,
because of the way news has changed, because of the way we receive news, because of the way journalism isn't quite as good as it used to be.
Well, and good and underfunded like never before. Listen, this goes right back to Paris. We're in the perfect storm of trouble here because we have less money for less talent to supply less journalism and less resources to get that journalism done at a time where we need more. And these knuckleheads in the Republican clown car, Democrats do, for their go-to position is the media sucks. You ain't helping.
Yeah.
So how about you just answer the question?
I was talking about this on my show earlier this morning. I was talking about how so many people are receiving their news through social media. And I don't know why, but I find that really disturbing.
Here's why. Because you're hearing what you want to hear. You're reading what you want to see, and you're believing what you want to believe. That's not news.
People were posting stories when all this broke, Beirut broke, and then when Paris broke over the weekend. Suddenly, stories that were 2-3 years old started to be posted online.
As news. Right.
Just to get people going, and it gets people going. It's like you have to triple and quadruple check anything that you find on social media
that's supposed
to be news. Then before you even remotely believe it, do that.
Yeah, but they don't. They take it and forward it. Twitter is a blessing
and a curse, but a curse to journalists because of that. When you see something, and I tell students this too, don't. Just because you see something on Twitter doesn't make it a fact.
And don't
verify it.
Don't share it. Don't repeat it.
Right.
I found out about what happened.
Unless I said it.
Unless Steve says it. I found out about what happened in Paris right after I got home from. I saw Brooklyn and Spotlight back to back. So it was like a majestic, wonderful 4 hours and 20 minutes of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It was just these two. The reason I go to movies are for that. And I'm mm-hmm. in this great mood. I walk in and I turn my phone on and I look at Facebook and I'm like, what the hell happened in Paris?
Right.
So I turn CNN on. I start watching CNN and I'm looking at this and I see the stuff that starts to get posted on Facebook and starts to get posted on Twitter. And I'm like, what are you? And then people believing it and then posting all this crazy stuff. And then when it started to get loony and I was watching CNN, after like an hour and a half, I had to turn off my phone and I had to turn off the TV and I put on Used Cars. I was like, I can't.
But that's a healthy thing to do.
I can't. I have to watch my favorite
you
comedy.
I have to walk away from it at some point.
And you know what bothers me more now than ever is when the death toll was greatly exaggerated in this instance as well. And went down, thankfully. But, you know, stop with the 500 debt. You know, wait. Just wait. You know, because, and there's families watching, too. Yeah. Their loved ones there or abroad.
Well, did you see one of the major blow-up arguments of the weekend is people are upset with Facebook because Facebook didn't treat Lebanon the same way they're treating Paris.
I saw that.
And that the students at the University of Missouri are upset because people are paying attention to Paris. I mean, come on.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, so, anyway, I watched Used Cars.
And still as good as you always
thought. It's the funniest movie I've ever seen. I followed it up, by the way, with Blazing Saddles. I was like, I am not turning on any more social media. I'm going right to the fart jokes.
I like denial when it's appropriate, but sometimes you can't run away completely. But in your case, I think it was appropriate. You saved your Friday night in some form.
Well, I mean, you know, I had gotten home, and I turned it on, and my great mood was completely gone at that point by the news, just what had happened in this world, okay? And then how people responded to it on social media made me, you know, made my head explode. And I don't know why, but I found out late to the game. I didn't find out till about 6 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock that evening. And I was tired of watching CNN. So I started switching back and forth. And then I was like, well, maybe I'll turn on some network. And I turned it on and there's Tom Selleck going, I'm a cop. And I was surprised by that. I was
the
like,
fact the network didn't go to coverage.
Exactly. I was a
different world. When we grew up, it would be news wall to wall.
Absolutely.
And they'd make up the commercials later. They can't afford to lose the money now.
I realized that Blue Bloods is an astonishing show, but I don't know. So I said, okay, well, I'm done. I'm watching Used Cars, and I'm going to watch Blazing Saddles.
Well, no one's judging.
You judge me like about.
I judge you each day.
That's why I love you.
Exactly. And did your mom and dad go to Brooklyn?
No. No, they're still in Chicago. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the veal.
We got to get you back on stage.
By the way,
thanks,
man. Did you hear my dad's joke this morning?
I did not, actually.
Hey, did you hear what happened when the dog went to the flea circus?
No, what happened?
Well, he stole the show.
I hope he delivered it just like that. I know Maria Menounos enjoyed it.
She did, yeah.
There is, you know, the yin and the yang of, you were just talking about this, the yin and the yang of social media being what it is. There's an amazing post by a survivor in France. It was on Facebook this weekend, 22-year-old girl who was alive. And she talks about what she went through, but she also talks about how lucky she is to be here. And we're going to read it to you. We're going to read it to you here in a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
So, tonight, plug anything?
Jen Bosworth is going to join me.
Oh, I love Jen.
Yeah, Jen is awesome. She actually just finished shooting a movie. We'll talk about that and a lot more. And then Wednesday morning, I'll be sitting where you're sitting.
Good. And you were invited Friday, but you have plans.
I'm off Friday.
That's what I mean. You have plans.
Yeah. Otherwise,
what are you doing on Friday?
I'm doing a thing Thursday night.
Doing something together on Friday that I'm not aware of?
Something Thursday night together?
Are we? I don't know.
Don't act like you guys don't know what you're doing.
I don't know what I'm doing.
I know I'm doing something Thursday night.
What's the thing you're doing Thursday
I'm
night?
I'm doing a thing with Zanies, like a debate thing.
Oh, no. I was going to do one of those, and they decided to pull the plug on it. Mine was Cosby-themed. And we were going to discuss Cosby and whether or not he's still funny and all that, and they decided to pull the plug on it.
All right. I am the con side
of
heckling.
Oh, sure.
I don't know.
Wait, you're against heckling?
Yes.
Oh, I think it's fun.
So well, come on then. Okay, then. Maybe you should join me on Thursday night. That's why I'm taking Friday morning and Friday night off.
So they have comedians and you guys debate kind of serious topics. That would be fun.
Yeah, it's a new thing Zanies is trying.
Yeah. I don't know why the hell they asked me. I was thrilled. They gave me choices. I passed on the Cosby one, man. Yeah. I totally passed.
I just said give me whatever you want, and that's what they gave me, and then they canceled on that. So apparently they offered.
They gave you the Cosby one?
Yeah, but apparently what happened was they said everybody else like you who wanted to insist on a topic, you picked all the topics, and they said, well, Cochran said he'll do anything. Give him Cosby. And then they pulled the plug on Cosby. Like the rest of America.
Hello.
Has.
No, well, that's what I'm doing Thursday night. That's going to require me to be out kind of late. So I'm,
okay.
I was just going to take my show off.
Glad you've gotten soft. I normally would have gotten
I had to take a day. You know how you got to take those days before they go, you can't take them anymore?
Yeah, we got to figure out a way to balance that around.
Before
the end
of the year.
The entire station is
off. I know.
I think we're going to see a lot of that in the coming weeks. Nice.
Quick break, back with the news, 720 WGN.
We stand in solidarity with them in hunting down the perpetrators of this crime and bringing them to justice.
I will refuse to allow these murderers to dictate how I should live my life.
12 noon local time here in Paris. All of Europe paused for a moment of silence in memory of the 129 victims of Friday's attacks.
Back to more Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
President Obama, the actor Christian Bale, and I've already forgotten who was third in that run. Oh, yeah, Aaron Kuchersky will join us later. Aaron Kuchersky from ABC News will be on with us from Paris this morning at 8:40. Speaking of Christian Bale and actors and things, Daniel Craig Bond, James Bond. I get confused for him a lot. I'm walking down the street, people go, Daniel Craig? Steve Cochran.
A lot of you could confuse a lot.
Yeah,
of
I
people.
Was going to say
Clooney,
Denzel, and Daniel Craig.
Those are the top three,
And occasionally Adele.
Oh,
yeah, which is weird. I don't know why that happens.
Probably because your melodious tone.
Probably the singing, yeah, because it's a completely different look.
Mm-hmm. I've never had that problem. How come?
I don't know. Well, you're a little pale. You know, you spend a lot of time in the barn.
Denzel. No, I don't see you as Denzel.
Oh well, maybe your vision's better. I mean, you and I have known each other for a long time. Paul Conrad does not join us today because we think it's appropriate to focus on the major story of the world, obviously. Not that Paul couldn't focus on that, but Paul and I are known for other things. So when we take care of traffic, you will come back, and I just want to share one other thing with you from that discussion earlier, and that is this 22-year-old Cape Town, South Africa woman's post. She was one of the survivors of the Bataclan massacre in Paris, and what she wrote is amazing. Incredibly mature for a 22-year-old, especially what she just went through. So we'll get to that in just a second. And then Adam Hoge on a wacky weekend in the NFL and the most powerful team in all of football, your Chicago Bears.
I'm not sure I'm ready to say that yet.
Oh, okay.
Might be a little bit of an overstatement.
And, well, there's only 16. You got to overstate when you can. And Dr. Kevin Most before 7 o'clock as well. I mentioned Aaron Kuchersky. Dean will be on later. Coach Q will be on later as well. And we have prizes and things, and you can text any time at 312-981-7200. Her name is Isabel Bowdery, and she's 22 years old. And, Dave, I know you can identify with this.
Yes.
As it can every parent of a kid who's a teenager or maybe in their 20s now. When your kid first decides they're going to go out to a nightclub or to a concert on their own, you know, you have to support their independence, and it's great if you've done a good job of teaching your kid how to be safe and make some good decisions. You're probably pretty confident, but I think any parent would be lying if they didn't at least imagine the worst possible scenario. You just go, oh, no, what if there's a car accident? What if there's this? What if there's that? And you always feel best when you hear the door click and they come back in the house or a phone call that says, hey, they had a great time. And you hope they didn't think of you once the entire night. You hope they just went out and had a good time, but you just want them to be safe. So there's a concert Friday night in Paris with this band called the Eagles of Death Metal, which I don't think any of us had ever heard of, but it's a fairly well-known international death metal band. And a sold-out show of 1,000 people at this pretty famous concert venue in Paris called the Bataclan. And these cowards come into the concert after it started and massacre 80 people at the Bataclan. I think
yeah,
that was the current number.
Yeah, 83, I think, was the...
Keeping in mind that at least as of yesterday, there were still 99 critically injured, many others as well. I mean, you know, it's a parent's worst nightmare. It's a terrible, terrible story. One of the survivors is a woman named Isabel Bowdery. She's 22. She's from Cape Town, South Africa, and she lives in Paris. Here's what she wrote this weekend on Facebook. You never think it'll happen to you. It was just a Friday night at a rock show. The atmosphere was so happy. Everybody was dancing and smiling. And then those men came through the front entrance and began shooting. We naively believed it was all part of the show. It wasn't just a terrorist attack. This was a massacre. Dozens of people were shot right in front of me. Pools of blood filled the floor. Cries of grown men who held their girlfriend's dead bodies pierced the small music venue. Futures demolished, families heartbroken, all in an instant. Shocked and alone, I pretended to be dead for over an hour, lying among people who could see their loved ones, motionless. Holding my breath, trying not to move, not cry, not giving those men the fear that they wanted to see. I was incredibly lucky to survive, but so many didn't. The people who'd been there for the exact same reason as I to have a fun Friday night were innocent. This world is cruel, and acts like this are supposed to highlight the depravity of humans, and the images of those men circling us like vultures will haunt me for the rest of my life. The way they meticulously aimed and shot people in the standing room area and put people in the center and shot them without any consideration for human life. Didn't feel real. I expected any moment for someone to say it was just a nightmare. But being a survivor of this horror lets me shed light on the heroes. To the man who reassured me and put his life on the line to try to cover my brain whilst I whimpered. To the couple whose last words of love kept me believing that there is good in the world. To the police who succeeded in rescuing hundreds of people. To the complete strangers who picked me up from the road and consoled me during the 45 minutes I truly believe the boy that I loved was dead. To the injured man I had mistaken for him, and then on my recognition he was not my boyfriend, held me and told me everything was going to be fine, despite being all alone and scared himself. And to the woman who opened her doors to the survivors, to the friend who offered me shelter and went out to buy new clothes so I wouldn't have to wear the blood-stained blouse that I had on. To all of you who have sent caring messages of support, you make me believe the world has potential to be better, to never let this happen again. But most of this is for the 80-plus people who were murdered inside the venue, who weren't as lucky, who didn't get to wake up today, and to all the pain that the friends and families of those people are going through. I am so sorry. There's nothing that'll fix it. I feel privileged to be there for their last breaths. And truly believing that I would join them, I promise that their last thoughts were not on the animals who caused all of this. It was thinking of the people that they loved. And as I lay down in the blood of strangers and waiting for my bullet to end my mere 22 years, I envisioned every face that I had ever loved and whispered, "I love you," over and over again. Reflecting on the highlights of my life, wishing that those I loved knew just how much, wishing that they knew no matter what happened to me to keep believing the good in people, to not let those men win. That night, the lives of many were forever changed, and it's up to us to be better people, to live lives that the innocent victims of this tragedy dreamt about, but sadly will now never be able to fulfill. R.I.P. Angels, you will never be forgotten. How's a 22-year-old have that kind of ability, right? It's incredible. It's an amazing thing. We'll post it. If you haven't already seen it, and you can go to my Twitter, at Cochran Show, and Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Adam Hogan, the NFL next, 622. This is 720 WG.
Cutler, Langford. One to one, across the 30. Langford now. Into Rams territory. Jeremy Langford. Can he go? Yes, he can. Touchdown, Chicago.
The legend in the making, Adam Hogue, is standing by. He is outside of Dave Ennett, the hardest working man in the sports business. You would agree that you don't work as hard as Ennett, right?
Correct.
Yes.
What's he going to say?
Yeah, it's the right answer.
I didn't travel yesterday. He traveled.
Yes. Okay.
All the way to St. Louis.
Okay, well then maybe get on a plane or something, Dave. You can follow Adam on Twitter, at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E. All right, nobody. Nobody saw the Bears blowing out the Rams, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I know a few people did pick the Bears to win the game, but not in the fashion that they did. That was their largest margin of victory
ever
since the game. Yeah, yeah.
It feels 73-0 over the Washington.
No, psychologically,
the 42 NFL championship.
Psychologically, this was more. This was 74 psychological points.
I understand why Bears fans feel that way, because I looked it up midway through the game when they were just up 14. I mean, that's not even a blowout, but they're up 14. And I'm like, when was the last time the Bears were up 14 points? And you had to go all the way back to their week six win in Atlanta last season for them to even have a 14-point lead at any point in any game. And then to win the game by as many points as they did, that was their largest margin of victory since 2012, a game in Tennessee. So it's been a long time since the Bears have had that dominant of a performance. And I just think it's, you look at the contrast of where this team is from exactly a year ago when they went into Green Bay and got completely blown out by halftime. The team was quitting on Mark Trestman. It's quite the turnaround, and it starts with the coaching staff.
Well, here's the thing. St. Louis is not a Super Bowl contender, but on all facets of the game, they appeared to be better than the Bears, with the exception of quarterback. They have continued quarterback problems. But the Bears dominated all three phases yesterday.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of how I evaluated these two teams coming in. Maybe I overestimated the Rams a little bit. I mean, I do think they have a good defense. I think that the Bears just completely, well, first of all, outplayed them, as you said, but I outcoached them too. And that was something that Jeff Fisher, the Rams head coach, admitted after the game. The Bears just had a better game plan, and they executed it. And there's been signs offensively in recent weeks that the offense was going to break out. They had so many drives early in the season where they got down in the red zone and then just settled for field goals. And I think the difference was yesterday they finished, and they also had those big explosive plays, which always helps too.
We were at the on the verge of suing the offensive coordinator in the first two or three weeks of the season for malpractice. Now he's a genius. This is the guy we wanted, right?
Yeah, and this is the guy, I think, that the Bears thought they were getting when they hired him. And really, John Fox already knew that because he had Adam Gase in Denver. But you know what's impressed me about him is you can always learn a lot about an offensive coordinator in the first 15 plays of the game, because that's when teams – that's really the only time where you're really scheming – and you kind of really have, in terms of having something scripted out before the game even starts. After that point, you're really kind of making adjustments based on what you've already seen. But all that prep during the week really shows up in the first 15 plays. And Adam Gase has kind of had different strategies every single week based on the opponent. And that really has shown itself in personnel. I mean, I remember going back even that first game against the Packers in week one, I mean, he came out there with no wide receivers for the first few plays. No one saw that coming, and it was actually a successful drive, even though they ended up losing that game. So I think Adam Gase has been pretty impressive. I think Jay Cutler's play reflects that, but you also have to give Jay a lot of credit too, because he's obviously put in the work and his command of this offense. I mean, who checks to a run play on 3rd and 10? And that was Jay Cutler who did that, and the Bears picked up 11. I don't know if that was just luck or a tremendous call on his part, but that really impressed me and impressed John Fox, too.
Two questions, Adam. Number one, regardless of what happens with Matt Forte and when he comes back, I presume Jeremy Langford now has earned the right to get more touches going forward here. That's one. And what in the world has gotten into Zach Miller?
Yeah, well, two great questions, Dave. And, I don't know what they're going to do at running back when Forte comes back. I mean, he's obviously the starter. He's still the guy you got to lean on as long as he's here. But there's no question that Jeremy Langford and, honestly, Kadeem Carey, too.
Yeah.
Carey had a better yards per carry average yesterday. I mean, he was actually the better runner. And the way Kadeem hits the hole is very impressive. He's a relentless runner. So the Bears have three pretty good running backs right now, and I think they like that. Now I would guess with their history of injuries this year that they'd like to keep all three fresh as possible. So they'll probably continue to be careful with Matt Forte when he comes back. I wouldn't be surprised if Jeremy Langford and Kadeem Carey kind of take a back seat for a little bit, because you know, God forbid anything else happens, they know they have those guys, and that's good. That's a good problem to have. And it'll certainly be a big storyline in the offseason. As for Zach Miller, this was the potential that has sort of been following him around his whole career, and yet he just keeps getting hurt. And this year he's healthy, and it's finally showing up. I mean, this guy did not play a single game in the NFL in 2012, 2013, and 2014. So it's remarkable for him to come up with three touchdown passes in the last two games. And I just loved – I suspected this as I saw the play live – but he looked up at the Jumbotron, when he was running away to see if there was anyone that was going to run him down, and he saw the guy right behind him, and he made the cut right at the last second to get away from him. And I did confirm after the game that that's exactly how it played out. He did see that guy on the Jumbotron, and that's pretty impressive.
Million NFL storylines that don't even include the Bears, but the Packers continue to lose, which is a storyline. Peyton Manning may not be healthy enough to play next week, which, of course, helps the Bears. The NFL's catch rules are more ridiculous every day and cost the Giants a win over the Patriots yesterday.
Yes,
and on it goes. So we need to catch up maybe later in the week and hit some of the other stuff, too. But great work as always, and where do we read you?
WGNradio.com/Bears.
Nice job, Adam.
All right, see you guys. Thanks. Right,
there you go. All the Adams getting it done. You know, your Gase, your Hogue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
West, right. Batman. Adam West,
yes,
Batman.
Adam West. Yeah. He's a...
We're all getting it done.
Man for all season.
Dr. Kevin Most coming up. First, a big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
Now, back to more Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. After 7 o'clock, Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institute on the danger we're in after the Paris bloodbath. And what we're doing about it, what may happen over the next few days, weeks, and even months. We'll get to all of that after 7 o'clock. But first, Doc, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Nice to talk to you. And I'm fine, thanks. Northwestern Medicine and Central DuPage Hospital, of course, impact every day. And I met some friends of yours on Saturday night. I was at the Marion Joy Gala and did the auction for them, helping them raise some money. But I know you guys have a nice partnership with those folks, so they all say hi.
We do. They're wonderful. You know, Marion Joy has been in existence, I think it's got to be approaching 50 years now, and probably one of the best rehab hospitals in the country. So we're very fortunate to have that in the western suburbs, and great rehab doctors, and kind of goes into what we're going to even discuss today. They do wonderful things there.
I want to talk about stroke. It's very scary because it can come pretty much without symptoms, right?
Well, usually you'll get the symptoms, but you don't have, unfortunately, the symptoms beforehand. But
yeah, that's what I mean, the symptoms ahead of time that would trigger that, hey, I'm in trouble here.
Correct. Now, there are some things that we would tell people, boy, you have a much higher chance of having a stroke if your blood pressure is elevated, if you have high cholesterol, if you have atrial fibrillation, if you smoke. So there are definitely risk factors for it. But, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen until it happens, unfortunately.
So once a stroke hits, there are some markers and some pretty standard stuff. We think a heart attack with the numb left arm and the sweating and those things, the pressure on your chest and all of that. What are the stroke symbols?
Yeah, so in the stroke one, this is really important not only for the individual but also for the people around them, because sometimes even the individual who's having a stroke won't even know he's having a stroke. So it's something very simple, and the acronym is FAST, F-A-S-T. F stands for face. If someone's looking at you and they smile and one side of their face does not go up, that's a good chance that they're having a stroke. Now, people say, oh, yeah, but that could also be Bell's palsy, and that's true. But it's important to find out that it's a stroke or not a stroke, and you'd rather find that out quicker. A is for arm. Can they not lift their arm? Do they have sudden weakness in their arm, their inability to move it? S is for their speech. Do they have slurred speech? Do they have difficulty saying words? Do they have confusing statements? And then T is time. Time is the most important thing. If you see any of these things, the FAS before, call 911. Get that person in the emergency department right away. Because just like heart attacks, the amount of time that the brain is without oxygen, the worse the outcome is going to be.
Well, I'll come back and talk about some of the technology that's out there to assist stroke patients, but also what can be done in those very important minutes that Doc's talking about, and the role that high blood pressure plays in all of this. There's also some new federal guidelines on what high blood pressure is and what it isn't. Stick around for all of that in a moment. It's Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Mary's back with your traffic. Tell us, what's Mary, did you have a nice weekend other than the obvious terrible world news?
Yeah, well, my son moved to Madison, so that was fun, you know, moving him and seeing Madison. But we're going to miss him.
Yeah, of course. Sort of an emotional wreck were you?
Yeah, kind of. I was pretty good, actually, because I lived in Madison myself, and I absolutely loved it. So,
does your husband, Steve, this bubbling idiot?
He was a little, yeah. He's going to miss the dog, the grand dog. Yeah. Very sad.
He's going to miss the dog. What about his kid?
Well, that too. But, you know, the dog. Because we used to watch him.
Leave the dog.
I know.
Monday morning cars are where? Peter Greenberg will be on later. Peter Greenberg, the travel guru, CBS travel expert, and Peter Greenberg, our travel buddy, on what this story out of Paris and the international travel concern should be for you. There's a notion that, you know, you can hop on a plane now, go to Paris cheap, and all the hotels will be cheap, and it'll be easy to get around, and it's never been more secure than it would be right now. All of that's probably true after Thursday or Friday of this week, but there's risk.
There is risk, too. So, and also, there's a producer at Channel 9 who had tickets. She was taking her family, and they were leaving Thursday in a couple of days. And the big concern now is that, well, we found out today that some of the things are going to reopen. The Louvre, the Eiffel Tower should be open this week as well. But a lot of things have closed because of everything.
Well,
so.
I'm not sure you would have the feeling of fun right now.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a pall over the city of Paris for obvious reasons. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day, we return with Dr. Kevin Most. All right, so, Doc, blood pressure. What do we know, and is the new number lower or higher than it was before?
It's actually lower.
Ah, great.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Excuse me. It's interesting. You know, a new study just came out. It's actually in this week's New England Journal of Medicine. They were running a study called the SPRINT study. And when they were looking at that, they were looking at the impact of blood pressure. And we all used to say, oh, you know, 120. Matter of fact, some older people can keep their systolic pressure at 140. We have two numbers when we have our blood pressure, the systolic number, and that's essentially the heart when it's at its highest pumping pressure. That's the top number. And then the diastolic number, which is the lower number, is when the heart is at rest. And everyone used to say, oh, 120 over 80, 120 over 80. And as we got older, we said, oh, you know what? Even 140 is okay. Well, the SPRINT study's been going on for about 8 years, 7 years now, and it actually was stopped a year early so that they could get this data out. And this data is just being printed, like I said, right now in the New England Journal of Medicine, because now we're going to start looking at keeping people over the age of 50 with a systolic pressure under 120. So that is going to be a huge impact on people. But the study did show that there's a huge decrease in the chance of heart attack as well as stroke if they can lower that systolic blood pressure under 120.
And under 120, obviously the goal would be what? Lose weight, have better diet, less salt, all of those things?
You hit all of those on the head. The only one that you really missed was exercise.
Okay.
So, you know, we want to keep our weight down. If our weight is down, the body, the heart does not have to work as hard to pump against the resistance of the rest of the body. If we exercise, the heart becomes a more effective pump. If we make sure that we have the right diet and sodium intake, again, the heart does not have to work as hard because of additional fluid that's in the body.
A couple of listeners chiming in. For a stroke victim, if they stick their tongue out and it goes from one side or the other, is that a sign?
Well, it can be, and that usually will be coupled with the smile portion of it as well, because it's going to affect those same muscles. And to be honest with you, any confusing thing that doesn't make sense, go to the hospital, because strokes can happen in so many different ways because the blockage in the brain can be at different areas in the brain that affect different parts of the body.
From 815, 3 years ago, my 48-year-old mother had a stroke. Thank goodness that my brothers and sister were home with her. She had all the signs. Unfortunately, my 19 and 17-year-old brothers thought fast, got her in a car, rushed her to the hospital. They gave her, is it TPA? Is that the drug?
Yep.
They gave her TPA and flew her to Peoria. By the way, Peoria's got amazing hospitals for a little town.
They really do. OSF in Peoria is a phenomenal hospital.
Yeah, and they were able to save her with minimal lingering issues.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point there, and that's the drug TPA. So prior to TPA being even known, which was late 80s, early 90s, we really didn't have a lot for stroke patients. When I was a resident at Lutheran General, a patient got a stroke. Our goal was to monitor their blood pressure overnight and then get them into rehab because there wasn't much we can do. Then TPA came, and TPA is a clot-busting drug. And we found that it worked in the heart for heart attacks. And someone said, well, if it works there, why don't we see if it works in the brain for strokes? And it works. Study came out last week that says, you know what, TPA is a great drug and works. And the nice thing about TPA is it can be given pretty much at any hospital. But just like that story you had right there, that patient got TPA and then was flown to Peoria. in Peoria, they probably had what do we call a neurointerventional procedure, where actually now we put catheters into the brain and remove the clot because we can do that quicker than the TPA works.
Is that right?
It is so cool.
That's pretty amazing. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, it is. It's great. You know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of people that can do it in the country, so the number of hospitals that have it are limited, but there's many in Chicago. We're fortunate here at CDH to have Dr. Harish Shonkeen and Dr. Ovi Mazumdar, who are unbelievable. And I'll tell you, if you ever come to the hospital, we should go up to his lab.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Seeing what he can do. And I'll tell you, someone comes in with the signs of a stroke, we know within 20 minutes what we're doing with that patient. We remove that clot. People that would have had to have been taught how to eat or taught how to work are going home 2 days later with no residual effects.
Yep. It's really miraculous.
Steve, I have a quick question for Dr. Most.
Yes, Orion Samuelson, question for Dr. Most.
The medical difference between stroke and TIA.
Great question, O. TIA is what we call a mini stroke. So sometimes with the TIA, you'll get a little bit of blockage, and then for some reason that blockage clears. So you say, geez, I have weakness in my arm, and then, oh, no, it's okay. It goes away. It resolves within 24 hours. We don't want to find out about those. We'd rather find out about those in a hospital. And unfortunately or fortunately, a TIA is a sign that you may have a stroke in the future. So much more awareness. So people with high blood pressure and have a TIA, boy, their doctor is going to get on top of them. So people have TIAs, transient ischemic attack, that's the TIA, versus a full-blown stroke. But those are warning signs that you could have a stroke in the future.
And those are always in your arm, or you'll see any of those symptoms?
No, it can be any of those symptoms.
Okay.
Yeah, I had one. I had a TIA about 5 years ago. It affected my walking, it affected my mobility, and for a couple of hours affected my speech.
And
fortunately, O is very good about making sure he listens to his wife and his doctors, and the rest of us should do the same thing. Doc, from the 847, if you think somebody's having a stroke, should you give them aspirin right away as you do with a heart attack?
Well, you know, people argue back and forth about aspirin, and to be honest with you, I would say the first thing you should do is don't medicate them, get them to the hospital. We can give them better drugs and drugs into their system faster than you can if they chew an aspirin. And also, we want to kind of make sure that they're not eating anything because we may be doing procedures on them.
312, thank you, CDH. You saved my dad. He was life-flighted after getting TPA from Elgin. Thank you, CDH. That should make you feel good. And then there's this. Doc, my blood pressure over the last 2 weeks has skyrocketed. Exactly what should I do? I'm tempted to call my doctor today. Well, first off, I think he should. Shouldn't he?
Absolutely, 100%, especially if you've seen a change dramatically in a short period of time. Obviously, that patient has a machine at home that can check their blood pressure, which is great. One thing I'd say, if they're listening, bring that machine with you so that you can check the accuracy of your machine versus the accuracy of the good one that they have in the doctor's office. And that is something that you don't want to mess with. So definitely get in. Talk to your doctor. He may not start you on medication right away. We like to see a reading of a high blood pressure like 3 days, not just once, because some people have what we call white coat hypertension. They come in our office, their blood pressure
right.
Yep. So we want to make sure that we check the machine, have them check it at home. If those high numbers continue in their home, in the comfort of their home, that's a patient that needs to be medicated.
And there's no tried and true way just to lower your blood pressure, right? I mean, if you feel like you have a spike going on, there's no instant way to drop your blood pressure, is there?
No, there's no way that, I mean, some people can say get in a relaxed situation because blood pressure will go up when you're under stress or nervous. That may lower it a little bit, but those are those incidences where it's, flight or fright. So we will change those, but those are transient. But what we really want to look at is what's your blood pressure continuously, because that's what's doing damage to the heart and to the brain.
Is it true potassium helps lower the blood pressure? I mean, I know it's not as easy as eat a banana, but you could have a blood pressure spike with a low potassium moment.
Yeah, you know, potassium and sodium, those are the two things that everyone talks about and about retaining water. And potassium more is going to work on the muscles. So that if we have a low potassium, you're going to get spasms. But I wouldn't go saying, oh, let's take some potassium pills and see if my blood pressure will go down, because you can end up with heart arrhythmias if you have too much potassium.
So eating 47 bananas a day isn't a great idea?
No, probably not. No.
Well, you're the doctor. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. That's the legend, Dr. Kevin Most. Thank you, my friend.
You got it. Take care, Steve.
All right, see you. Back with the news next. And then Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institute on our own safety going forward after Paris on 720 WGN.
The killing of innocent people based on a twisted ideology is an attack not just on France, not just on Turkey, but it's an attack on the civilized world.
713, the entire nation of Syria is about the size of the greater New York City area, and the population is dropping every day. And I think we're all clear that this is the epicenter of all the pain and agony that ISIS has created and continues to create. The person who knows more about this than anybody I know is our friend Michael O'Hanlon at the Brookings Institute. And we always turn to you at times like this, Michael, to make us understand these issues better. There's no pressure there, is there?
Well, good morning to you. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you being on again. Let's go in reverse order here before we get to the root cause. What danger are we under in the near and immediate, or the immediate and the near future?
Well, there's a good debate about this. And so the bottom line is, you know, we're not sure, because we realize that some of these attacks take a certain amount of luck, and it's actually, in the end, a number of individuals who do them. It's not, you know, broad forces of jihadism or whatever. I mean, those broad forces contribute, but it's ultimately four planes that are hijacked on 9/11 in the United States, or 7 or 8 or 10 or 20 people in Belgium and France who do what they did Friday. And so it's sort of statistical. It's, you know, it's chance, as well as being something you can try to assess. Mike Morrell was the deputy CIA director. Over the weekend, he was saying on national radio and television that he thought it was inevitable that we'd have some kind of an attack in the United States. By contrast, my former colleague and good friend Dan Benjamin has an op-ed in today's New York Times. He used to be the coordinator for counterterrorism at the State Department. He pointed out how much better our homeland security and our intelligence operations are than those of our European friends. And, of course, we're much further away from the epicenter in Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan. Bottom line, it's less likely to happen here, I believe, than in Europe again in the future. But I would never try to make a sweeping prognostication. And I think we do have to be braced for the possibility of an attack that hopefully would never be on the scale of what we just witnessed in Paris. But it can't be ruled out.
Is it possible we have too much intelligence? And by that, I mean there are so many leads to chase, somebody could slip through the cracks?
Well, yes. There's just too much to track. And this has to be kept in mind anytime we have these debates over privacy. You know, and frankly, I believe the debate over privacy is important, but I actually think we've overcorrected.
Oh, completely agree.
Yeah. Made it harder for the intelligence world to keep, you know, records that it might need to search for needles in the haystack, so to speak. And once I start hearing of abuses of American citizens being prosecuted or persecuted unrighteously based on some kind of intelligence abuse, then I'll be more worried. And in fact, I would support strengthening safeguards. So if anybody ever does that based on this kind of information, that they are punished severely and promptly within the intelligence community. But I haven't seen any abuses of that type since 9/11. So I think we're going to have to help our intelligence communities continue to develop better tools to find these needles in the haystack.
Quick traffic update here, and then I'm going to ask Michael O'Hanlon about Syria, about Russia's partnership, if there is one, with us, and where we go from here. First at 7:16, Mary's back with your traffic trouble spots. Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institute, one of my favorite guests, is on the phone. Michael, we seem to repeat the same mistakes over and over again, and it's not because we're not decent people. We are trying to do the right thing, but in any big problem, there are immediate solutions and solutions that maybe happen down the road. Don't we at this point have to give up on the idea of a united Syria?
Well, yes, I think so, although I don't think we should break it up or see it broken up into individual states. If you do that, you probably cause more problems than you solve. For example, the Kurds, if they tried to break off into an independent state, Turkey would be livid, and any cooperation we could establish with Turkey, I think, would be foregone. So I think what you need is a very loose confederation of different smaller autonomous zones, maybe a half dozen of them. And I think that's the only realistic way. The other point I would make is that once there is a peace deal, and it's not going to happen as soon as Secretary Kerry would like, and even though I'm a big fan of his overall, I don't think he's on the right track with this process. He just continued in Vienna over the weekend. But even once we get to a deal, you know, beyond President Obama and Secretary Kerry's tenure, I think, someone's going to have to enforce it. Someone's going to have to be the army on the ground or the police force on the ground. We're going to need some kind of a UN or NATO-led peacekeeping force. And I'm anticipating that that force is going to have quite a difficult job. And if you really try to piece Humpty Dumpty back together and have people live together in all the different communities where they used to, I think it becomes just an overly difficult mission that starts to resemble almost the occupations of Iraq and Syria. So you got to try to simplify it. And the way you do that, I believe, is to have these confederal zones or these autonomous zones, which essentially govern and police themselves. And the peacekeeping force would then just be sort of along the lines between them and in the central cities, a few of which will probably remain interethnic and intermixed. So looking down the road, I think a confederation just works a lot better for a lot of reasons.
Assad has to go, right?
Yes, but with this confederation model, you could have him retreat to the so-called Alawite sector, the group he's from, and the group the Russians are trying to protect. And so there could be a compromise, which I think we'll probably need. So he would no longer have any power over Sunnis or, Kurdish population, Christian population even would hopefully not have to deal with him. But he could still be either resident or even in some kind of a political office in his Alawite sector of the country. That, to me, is the natural compromise with Russia.
My idealistic view of the world is that we shouldn't have to talk about politics, but politics is intermingled, of course, in all of this. And Putin did a nice job of boxing President Obama into a corner and even offered to partner with the United States in the early hours after Friday night. What does a partnership look like? And since he wants Assad and since Russia needs Syria and wants their naval base left alone and needs Syria's money for their weapons and things of that nature, how does Obama compromise with Putin and how do they get beyond the fact that they seem to hate each other?
Well, they don't get beyond that latter fact. So they're just going to have to, be professionals and recognize their country's interests and necessitate this. And I think that's what President Obama is doing. I don't think he's had any regard for Putin for 4 or 5 years, at least. But he knows he can't just ignore him. On the issue of how we really cooperate with Russia, I don't take anything Putin says at face value. And I'm sure no one else in your listening area does either. And I think that realistically, we're going to have to assume that he's doing things differently from what he says or what he declares he wants. And he said, for example, he came in to fight ISIL, but no, he came in to prop up President Assad, his ally. So that's why I think we have to have this kind of a model of confederation, which allows Russia to protect its core interests, that Navy base on the Mediterranean and so forth. But Russia is not right now going to pressure President Assad to step down. And if we think they are, I think we're deluding ourselves. And so Russia is not going to compromise on that point. They would say that Assad is still the lesser of the evils here. And if they pressure him to step down, it's not clear what will follow him. And so they feel pretty strongly about this. I don't think we're going to compromise very effectively on that point.
There's many people listening who are frustrated because they don't understand how we could take what amounts to a small city of really bad guys and not simply wipe them off the face of the earth. The obvious problem with that is they have intermingled themselves amongst a lot of civilians, and 99% of the people in the areas that ISIS occupies would prefer not to die because they happen to be where ISIS is and they can't get out. So how do we make those two things work together when we've seen such slow training for forces in Iraq to defend themselves? And how good are the moderate forces in Syria to be able to pick it up and go if we give them more ammo?
They're not good enough. They're not big enough. The only forces in Syria that are good enough are the Kurds, and they're not going to go too far beyond their traditional Kurdish zones. So we're going to have to work with Arabs more effectively than we have, and to me that means putting a lot of American trainers on the ground. When I say a lot, I mean hundreds, maybe a couple thousand, and starting, obviously, in the safest places. But I think we're going to have to get beyond the delusion that we can do this all from other countries or with the 30 or 40 people that President Obama has just announced he's willing to send into Syria. It's going to take hundreds. The training is going to have to happen on the ground inside of Syria at more of an industrial scale. And then I think we'll be in a better position, at least to carve out some relatively more secure areas. We can start helping provide humanitarian relief. We can break the problem down into more manageable bite-sized pieces.
And where do you rank Belgium in all of this now?
Well, yeah, I mean, good question. We've really learned a lot. I mean, obviously, European intelligence agencies knew about some of the more difficult neighborhoods in Brussels, and I think the rest of the world is finding out the hard way. Belgium is going to need, what can you say? It almost has to treat these areas like the same kinds of zones that we've faced in Iraq and Afghanistan, where you have to build up an integrated strategy. You don't go in with tanks, obviously, but you build up an integrated strategy to patrol the streets more effectively, to reach out with more economic opportunity. If you don't do these things, especially with all the refugees flooding in and probably a lot of them going to these more difficult neighborhoods in Brussels, the problem is just going to get worse.
Michael O'Hanlon's new book, The Future of Land Warfare, talks about the fact that you can't do it by just flying over it. You can't do it by just talking about it. And if you get deeply into the book, you'll see that it's very readable, very understandable, and brings a lot of common sense into a very difficult problem. Brookings.edu has more on the future of land warfare, but we can get it wherever books are sold, can't we?
That's right. Again, very kind of you to plug it. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you being on. We'll talk again soon. Thank you, Michael.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institute, Brookings.edu. Back with more in a moment, 7:25, The Steve Cochran Show, show number 536. And we're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. You can text me at 312-981-7200. Follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show or Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Remember, we're talking about travel later with Peter Greenberg. What's your travel plans going to be like over the holiday season, especially if you're planning a big trip anywhere overseas? More in a moment on 720 WGN. Just out of the news, and you don't need the music for this, Kev, but a quick don't hit send that is so phenomenally stupid. It's hard to comprehend. There's a guy in Minnesota that Andrea told me about last night named Dan Kimmel. Mm-hmm. And Dan Kimmel was running for the Minnesota House. And in running for the Minnesota House, he tweeted out his thoughts on what happened in France and on ISIS. And what did he tweet?
He tweeted, this is shortly after the Paris attacks, "ISIS isn't necessarily evil. It's made up of people doing what they think is best for their community. Violence is not the answer, though."
That's unbelievable.
And then, of course, that set off a flurry. What in the world are you talking about? Some expletives we can't repeat.
And a day ago, he said, "I deplore the evil acts of ISIS. I don't defend them." And then finally, overnight last night, he said, "I closed my campaign."
Yeah. And I think he shut down his Twitter as well. But how about that? ISIS isn't necessarily evil. Really?
This is why Twitter is really great and also really dangerous for people. And I suppose we could say it's great because it identifies the dangerous. Because this guy shouldn't hold elective office.
No.
I mean, come on.
No.
And not because he's a member of ISIS or supports ISIS, because he's an idiot.
Well, especially, yeah.
Which part of the chopping off of people's heads do you think might have gone too far?
Yeah.
7:32. Ham's coming up. Let's get to the big story now, Kev.
I don't feel like I did that much because I didn't do that much. Our offensive line did a great job controlling the ball in the second half. The guys on the outside make some big plays because against a front like that and a secondary like that, it's very rarely are you going to get some chunk plays like that. I think they'd only given up a couple past 25 yards all year long. So you got to give guys on the outside credit.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense. It's time for Dan Hampton.
Remember when we thought Cutler wasn't so great? Now Cutler's the cutest. Look at that little quarterback. Look how cute he is. Getting it done, man. Cutler looked great again.
Did you hear that number I just threw out there?
I did not.
His quarterback rating, or his passer rating of 151, the highest of his career. Only one Bears quarterback ever had a higher rating in a game. And that was a game I'm sure Dan remembers very well because it was Vince Evans in the 61-7 romp over the Green Bay Packers many years ago.
Hey, that's a great memory to kind of dredge up.
Yeah,
here's... as we look at the next couple of weeks, yeah, we're going to go up and see those clowns in 10 days. So, hey, let's talk about how we used to bury the Packers on a weekly basis.
Here's the thing about yesterday. Nobody saw it coming, and you made a great point in the postgame yesterday, the must-listen postgame yesterday, the Hamp OB and Kaz show, where it was the first time we'd heard a Giddy Cutler. What'd you call him? Giddy Cutler? Giddy Cut?
Giddy Cutty. It was contagious on the sidelines. You saw Adam Gase, John Fox, Cutler, which is, you know, to the victor goes the spoils, is, you know, the coach used to say, and that's the way it should be. When you play well, and, you know, it's almost a release where, boom, you get a win, and the world is all cool until you got to cinch it up a week later and do it again. But it's been a long time since we've seen this team actually start to, right before our eyes, come together and play as a football team. We've talked, you know, weekly on this program about what has to happen and what needs to happen and what we hope will happen. And man, it's all starting to come together, and it's almost official. It's playoff fever in the air.
Yeah, well, in Green Bay land, the Packers have serious problems. I don't know how they could play so poorly yesterday and not have undisclosed injuries, trouble in the locker room. What are we hearing?
Well, two things. Number one, their superstar, Double-Check, is it, 2 weeks ago they went to Denver, and his offensive line had a horrible night, and he got battered. And ever since then, he has – the same thing that happens to all quarterbacks. Everybody was saying, well, what's wrong with Cutler? When you're getting beat around, that it's hard to plant your feet and make decisive throws. And ever since then, he's having a hard time putting the ball on receivers. And what happens is other teams now, hey, they don't respect your offensive line. They start blitzing a little more. They start being a little more reckless with the rush. The receivers are being covered more aggressively. Defensive backs are emboldened. They start jumping routes. And, hey, it's a compression effect. And you see it in Seattle last night. The first half, the Arizona Cardinals just smothered Russell Wilson and that offense because they're just compressing it. Same thing up in Green Bay. And they've had some injuries like everybody else, and they're just having a hard time dealing with it.
They're a hot mess. Are the Vikings real?
I am not a believer in the Vikings. A lot of people are drinking the purple Kool-Aid. I know this. Adrian Peterson still got it. They've got a good defense, solid defense. But I'm not a believer. And, you know, we had those guys on the ropes. I mean, come on. Think about what our defense has done the last 3 weeks. And if the Vikings are so great, why did they only score one touchdown against our little defense that is, you know, using baling wire and duct tape trying to keep itself together? So, you look on the chart, the Vikings are at the top of the division, but back to what Dave Innett was saying there at the beginning, Jay Cutler has quietly become the best quarterback in the NFC North, and nobody ever thought would be saying that in November.
And outside of Brady, there's no quarterback playing better in the league. Who thought we'd say that?
I mean, really, come on. Phillip Rivers, he outplayed him. Aaron Rodgers, we saw that, you know, Aaron struggle. Carson Palmer, he had a, you know, I got to tell you what, I'm impressed with the way the Arizona offense came back after having lost all of the momentum in that game, and he came back and drove them for that touchdown to take the lead in the fourth quarter. So is Jay Cutler doing well? Guess what? Just like Carson Palmer drove his team for a come from behind touchdown, well, Jay Cutler has done that more than any other quarterback in football. I think 10 play plus drives this year in the NFL, which is tops. Now, that means your quarterback is executing the offense and staying within, you know, the parameters of what they're trying to do. So there's a lot of good stuff. But, you know, we're a long way from being a dominant team. We're just, no, you know, this is a team that says, hey, we want to play. And, oh, by the way, we just beat you.
Yeah, it's fun again. Yeah, that's the thing. More with Hamp in a second, and Dave Ennett will ask him personal questions. Stand by for that. Dave, I told you, careful of the personal questions.
Yeah,
you don't
I wouldn't
make anything
dare.
That
no,
large, that
no,
angry.
No.
But we'll come back and do more with Hamp here in just a second. Mary's here with your traffic trouble spots. By the way, Mary, on the heels of the discussion with Michael O'Hanlon about a half an hour ago, I wrote a blog this weekend, kind of the frequently asked questions about the whole mess. You can check that out on Twitter at Cochran Show, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show as well. And is that up at WGNRadio.com yet, Kev? Do we know?
Yes, it is up at WGNRadio.com, and it's on your social media accounts as well.
So. Yeah, right, and the WGN Radio app. So check that blog out.
Cochran, end zone, touchdown, second of the day for Zach Miller. Jay Cutler on that drive, 7-on-7 for 41 yards.
Zach Miller, the Jerry Rice of 2015. Dave Ennett, say hi to Dan Hampton.
Mr. Hampton, Just one other point on the Packers before we totally, or in the Vikings before we totally leave that. They play this Sunday at Minnesota, and they still have two games remaining against each other. So, you know, there's going to be an opportunity there. The next three games for the Packers are at Minnesota, the Bears and Lambeau on Thanksgiving, then at Detroit, the team that beat them yesterday. So going to be kind of interesting. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the defense, because it seemed like the St. Louis Rams, and I was a little surprised by the Rams' performance. I mentioned this earlier. I thought they would put on a better show. They couldn't block the Bears. They were holding on just about every play. They were called for holding on just about every play. I was really, considering the Bears are without Pernell McPhee, they've had some growth on the defensive side of the ball as well.
Well, two thoughts about that. Number one, you know, Willie Young was coming off of a serious injury from last year, the torn Achilles, and Lamar Houston had tore up his knee in that ridiculous little stunt that he pulled. Well, guess what? A month ago, everyone surrounding the team was under the impression that, hey, these guys are tradable and we don't need them, and how soon can we get rid of them? Well, guess what? Yesterday, when the Bear defense took the field, you talk about, you know, the little ragtag unit. Think about the money that Phil Emery spent for Jared Allen, who's no longer here, that was basically a bust out. Think about Jeremiah Ratliff, who, you know, went a little nuts and got in the spaceship, and now he's gone. And then, of course, Pernell McPhee, who was signed for $45 million. All three of those high-money players, nowhere around the stadium yesterday. And yet, this young defense, trying to grasp, you know, the nuances of a brand-new defense under Vic Fangio, went out there, and they were the dominant defense on the field yesterday. So there's so many really good subplot stories here that, you know, it's hard to have time to bring them up. But you're exactly right. You know, the defensive line is, you know, it's a rookie, Will Sutton, who is an undersized afterthought at defensive end. Jarvis Jenkins is a guy that we signed for less than $1 million as just a body. And the next thing you know, these guys are not only playing, but they're playing the entire game and playing pretty darn well. So, there's, like I said, there's a lot of really good feel-good stories about this team.
You know, the dominance yesterday was all over the field, up and down the field. They closed hard. They didn't quit. They played for 60 minutes. You pick a coach's cliche, and it was all there. And now you get next weekend, and we'll talk more about this on Friday, but next weekend you get a Peyton Manning that maybe is going to be hospitalized. I mean, we don't even know if he's going to play. So, you know, here's one more cliche. It's really right out there in front of the Bears. It's all laid out in front of them. Take care of your own business while the rest of the conference or the rest of the division beats up on each other, and anything's possible.
Absolutely. And, well, you know, everybody is wondering who's going to emerge out of that game this weekend, as you said, Dave. You know, hey, Minnesota, they have basically played some good, solid football, but are they unbeatable? No, we had them beat. So it'll be interesting to see if the Packers can kind of scrape it back together and try to go on the road and win a game. But, you know, we don't worry about that. We got, you know, Peyton Manning, it's almost embarrassing how bad he's playing this year. He's had 14 interceptions in the last six games alone. So, I mean, is the Denver Broncos unbeatable? No, we've been given a great fortune here in the sense that, you know, in September you look at Denver and Green Bay back to back. You're saying, what did we do to deserve this? Well, right now, hey, I can't wait for these games to start. They're not only playing into our hands, but I like the way we match up.
You know, here's the thing: you can't really talk about playoff hopes and all that right now. But if you just keep winning, if you play like this down the stretch and you win some games, the way the NFC is right now, there's, I think, six teams that are tied with the Bears at 4-5. Now, there are a couple of games behind those 6-3 teams, but nobody's really out of reach except for, You know, Carolina at 9-0, and everybody else is kind of maybe the 7-2 teams. But
well,
even
and
them.
Momentum matters.
It does matter.
And,
absolutely.
And 4-5 team with all the momentum that you have versus the 4-5 teams that aren't going in the right direction, take
right.
that all day.
Right. Like the Rams are one of those.
Well, the one thing that I really think we have to kind of focus on is the fact that as we, you know, as we've talked about the development of a lot of these young players, you know, 7-8 rookies are making big contributions on a weekly basis now. But, you know, you could talk about Jeremy Langford, you know, even Kadeem Carey showed up yesterday running the ball hard. But right at the beginning of the show, it was Jay Cutler talking about the offensive line. And we really haven't talked much about what they've been able to accomplish. But, you know, when I told you what I think is wrong with the Packers, where did I start? I said their offensive line has started to fail, and he's getting hit around. Well, Jay Cutler, for the first time in a long time, he's able to plant his feet. He's able to work and move in the pocket. And I think the last 2 weeks they've only given up one sack a game. So a lot of the good stuff that we're able to talk about and enjoy. Hey, you got to give that offensive line a lot of credit. And the offensive line coach, this guy, I look forward to sitting down and visiting with him sometime in the near future, because I got to tell you, the way he was like a mad scientist. You know, Jermon Bushrod was a high-dollar free agent that we signed. He can't get back on the field now because, you know, the kid they put in there, Charles Leno Jr., is playing too well. And, you know, moving Kyle Long out to tackle, everybody screamed, that's craziness. He flip-flopped the two guards, moving Matt Slauson to center. And so all these moves, if you was to have somebody tell you in August, okay, this is what we're going to do, you would have had them committed. But guess what? Not only has it worked, it's worked out smashingly. And they're getting better by the week.
And Matt Slauson, man, it's like Shrek playing center. I mean, the guy's huge.
You know, everybody knows who Kyle Long is, and he played his best game of the last month yesterday. He played pretty darn well. But Matt Slauson is—he's almost like the enforcer of the offensive side of the ball, and he's done a great job of not only you know, zipping it and playing a position that really, you know, it may not be his strong suit, but he's doing it, and he's, you know, he's accepting that responsibility, and he's done a great job. And, you know, as much as we work out of the shotgun and as much as we see, you know, San Diego, a lot of blitzes, and we talk about Jeremy Langford being able to pick it up. Well, guess what? It all starts by the center designating the package of the blocking that they're going to utilize on any given play. So there's like I said, you know, the Bears are, you know, winning a couple of games and everybody's acting, ooh, this is great. Well, there's a lot of really cool stuff happening right beneath the surface that is only going to make us better in December. And who knows, maybe into January.
How about that? Who knew?
Think we'd be having this conversation?
No, absolutely not. More on the preview of Peyton Manning here or not, and the Bears continuing to roll through the National Football League when we hook up with Hamp on Friday. And nice job again yesterday, the Hamp OB and Cuz show with Mark Carmen bringing snacks. You guys sounded great again.
Hi. Thank you, my friend. And, you know, it's fun to be giddy on certain occasions, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. Is OB okay, Kev?
Hi. I'm Ed Obradovich, and I have a puck in my pants.
Oh, no wonder he's giddy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sam. Back with the news next, 720 WGN.
Paris is the city of light. And here in New York City, we know that light will never go out. Our love and support is with everyone there tonight. We stand with you. Paris, c'est la ville lumière. Ici, à New York City, nous savons que cette lumière ne s'éteindra jamais. On vous envoie tout notre amour et soutien ce soir. Nous sommes de tout cœur avec vous. And now, live from New York, it's Saturday Night.
It's a very nice opening to Saturday Night Live, and probably the highlight of the show. Cecily Strong did a very nice job there. And she gets better every week, by the way, in general. But not the only adjustment that was made in show business. Dean Richards is here. Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff in the movie and the TV business.
Chicago's own Cecily Strong, growing up in the Oak Park area. So very proud of her. They have canceled a couple of episodes that were supposed to be on tonight. The Supergirl episode was supposed to have dealt with a terrorist bombing, so they've pulled that episode, going to replace it with something else. NCIS LA was supposed to have dealt with a storyline of a young girl who was recruited into a terrorist organization. That's been replaced tonight as well. Also, other entertainment things that have been affected. Bono and U2 were supposed to do a couple of concerts in Paris tonight and tomorrow. They have canceled both. The band was out at one of the bombing sites last night and placing flowers there out of respect. They've talked about how this attack is also an attack on free artistic expression and music. Because ISIS has said in particular that music is, you know, the work of the devil and it's perversion.
It's okay if you cut somebody's head off, but don't play any U2.
Yeah, it's all very Hitler, you know, like trying to control culture. So that was canceled. Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters were supposed to do a show in Paris tonight. They've not only canceled their concert, they canceled the rest of their European tour. They had about a half a dozen dates left, and they said out of respect to those who die, it just didn't seem appropriate to do concerts. Coldplay, Motorhead, Marilyn Manson, all canceling shows. Madonna did a show in Stockholm, Sweden over the weekend, but stopped the show at a point and actually broke down, got very emotional for her, and we have a little bit of that.
It's disturbed me all day. And it's been really hard, actually, to get through the show. Because in many ways, I feel torn. Like, why am I up here dancing and having fun when people are crying over the loss of their loved ones?
And she goes on from there, Dean, and she eventually gets back into the concert. But yeah, she was very moved.
Sang a beautiful version of her song Like a Prayer that she dedicated to those who died in the tragedy.
Yeah, it was a nice moment.
Yeah. Also, over the weekend in New York City, the Metropolitan Opera there was going to do an afternoon matinee of Tosca, and instead the entire company of the Metropolitan Opera came on stage and did this.
I didn't even know about it. How cool is that?
It's a really nice, beautiful French national anthem, led by the world-renowned tenor Placido Domingo as part of that. So there have been some pretty moving, you know, say what you want about the entertainment world. You know, 90% of the time it's completely nuts, but, you know, sometimes it is profound and moving, and they get it together and, you know, can do things. All of that said, you know, last night, Stephen Colbert on Friday, this was just as the news was breaking about the attack, as he was taping his show, ended his show with the announcement and literally was speechless. It was rather moving. Some of the other shows, Bill Maher show, dealt with it on Friday night. But last night, so after a couple of days of having some time to digest this all, maybe one of the more brilliant news satire shows on television, John Oliver's program on HBO. John Oliver opened the program with this profanity-laden opening, which really kind of galvanizes the way that we all felt about it. Our bleepometer was going crazy, you know, trying to make this acceptable so you all could hear it this morning.
It's hardly been 48 hours, and much is still unknown. But there are a few things we can say for certain. And this is when it actually helps to be on HBO, where those things can be said without restraint. Because after the many necessary and appropriate moments of silence, I'd like to offer you a moment of premium cable profanity. So here is where things stand. First, as of now, we know this attack was carried out by gigantic unconscionable, flaming possibly working with other Definitely working in service of an ideology of pure f***ery. Second, and this goes almost without saying, f*** these a***holes. If I may say, sideways.
That's tremendous.
It's awesome. I mean, does that say how we all really feel about this?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, just really in less than a minute, he gets it all down. So that's entertainment world dealing with this. That's pretty much everything that's going on with it. Spike Lee over the weekend was given an honorary Oscar by the Board of Governors by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. In his acceptance speech for this award, trashes Hollywood over its lack of diversity, saying that the only black folks that he ever sees, despite the fact that everybody in the room, he said, voted for Barack Obama, that when he comes into their offices, the only black faces that he ever sees are the ones at the security gate checking off his name.
Well, then why go pick up the award?
From a list.
You know what I mean? I mean, then why pick up the award? I mean, it's not like Spike Lee can't get an audience for that anywhere. You know, he'd be on somewhere that people be happy to put him on to say that.
That's what Spike Lee does, though.
I know. It's just lame.
That's his whole thing. I mean, I agree with you. If you got a problem with it, just say no thank you. I have a problem with Hollywood, and I'm not going to accept the award.
Right, because there's no one in the country that wouldn't give Spike Lee an audience in some way if he wanted to make that same statement. It's just stupid.
Yeah, he's also got a new movie coming out. Chirac is going to be opening the beginning of December. This is all publicity and marketing.
Yeah,
at the same time. He's at this event and wearing a Chirac hat. It's a hat that says
that's
Chirac.
Not a double standard at all, is it?
Yeah, so.
I have a question for you, however. After your incredible review of the Brad and Angelina movie on Friday.
Yes.
Where you couldn't wait to encourage people to do anything but go see it. How
I'm
did they do this
I'm
trying
to
weekend?
Protect. All I'm trying to do is protect people.
I understand.
That's my job. So the James Bond movie was the number one movie this weekend. Took in another $35 million. Peanuts came in after that, $24 million. The third, fourth, and fifth movies on the list took in roughly $6 to $8 million apiece.
Okay.
Brad and Angelina, $95,000.
Come on!
$95,000.
How is that possible?
Did not even break six figures.
It's the power of Dean.
It's the power of virtually every critic in the world.
Now, you understand what that means? That means that 9,500 people at $10 a ticket went to see that movie.
Now, it wasn't in a lot of theaters.
Was it in more than three?
It wasn't more than three, but I will say that it wasn't in a lot of theaters. But for two of arguably at least as of Thursday of last week, the biggest movie stars in the world to have a bomb like this, 95.
That's an epic bomb.
So not even $100,000. Not even $99,000.
That's amazing.
$95,000for By the Sea, which is.
Wow. Are you sure Gwen Stefani wasn't in that movie? Because she's a terrible person. She may have scared people away.
I love how you work that in at a moment's notice. Just when you think that Steve can't figure out a way that, maybe he's over it. Maybe he's going to give it a rest for a week.
It's been 20 years. Why would I be over it?
Could be talking about the school lunch program. And
I'll find a way. I will find a way. All right, buddy. Thank you.
All right. See you.
Aaron Katursky from ABC News is live in Paris coming up. Stand by for that. Coach Q after 9. The big story is next. It's 8:27 now on 720 WGN.
Now, back to more Steve Cochran.
8:41, Aaron Katursky on the ground for the ABC News in Paris. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. It's a day that Paris is trying to get back on its feet, with people returning to work and school and tourist and cultural institutions reopening. And yet still a palpable sense of loss. So many people stopping by the different scenes of the attacks Friday to leave flowers or to cry, to hug each other. There was a moment of silence across Europe and in Paris and Place de la République, right in the middle of the neighborhood where all this unfolded. People just streamed into the square to hold hands, to hug. And then there was spontaneous applause, a real sense of resolve to move forward.
Is there less of a Monday feel on the streets, just to, even though things are starting to reopen, because people are afraid to go out?
I think that was the case over the weekend. You know, the Saturday night after the Friday night attacks, it was dead in this one of the great nightlife cities in the world, and nobody was on the street. We walked around just shocked at how few people were actually sitting out in bars and restaurants and cafes and the like. But today, people have come back out, and they came out on Sunday, too, but mainly to stop by the places where the attacks occurred. There are growing mounds of flowers and candles and notes, and I was struck by one note outside the restaurant where the American, Naomi Gonzalez, was killed, and the bullet holes are still visible in the window. And the note said, you know, let your faith triumph over your fear.
It's very nice. And very accurate, and very, you know, and a great short message that we all ought to run with. How many of the dead have been identified?
Most. They're still working to identify a few dozen, but more than 100 of the victims have now been identified, and some of their names and faces have begun to appear in the pages of the local newspapers. And what's so striking is that they're known to the neighborhood, because the attacks happened in restaurants and at the theater that were, you know, here in the 11th arrondissement, where Charlie Hebdo had its offices.
Right.
And so the neighborhood has come under attack twice. But this is just kind of young, urbane, middle class. And so a lot of people knew the victims. And I think that's why there are, you know, particular tears being shed for individuals. And when the moment of silence was happening earlier, the president of France opted to go to the Sorbonne in order to be with students, because so many students were killed.
There is a concern that with the heavily populated Arabic suburbs, there'd be an increase in prejudicial behavior or anger towards Arabic people. I assume there's Arabic people in the Paris area now who are trying to express their grief and their unity. Are they being welcomed?
Well, at the moment, I saw some on a street corner not far from the Bataclan. Just now I saw them, and they were engaged in trying to reassure the public that they didn't have an ill-suited message. It's a struggle, and France in particular has struggled, like many European countries have, with an Arab population that has not always felt at home. And I think part of what's troubling is that there were Frenchmen involved in this. Many had ties to Belgium, but there were also French citizens. But the attacks ultimately have been traced to Syria. And this is where ISIS seems to be trying a new strategy, a command and control structure in Syria at the very top of the Islamic State leadership, but localized cells that are recruited to carry out these attacks. And the fear is that Paris is not it, that other European, even American cities could be next.
It's 3:45 there now. A full day has gone by, almost a full day again. And as far as we know, this eighth member of the attackers is still out there somewhere?
He is. Salah Abdeslam was the first named suspect and became the subject of a manhunt. For a while today, they thought they had him cornered outside Brussels in a neighborhood that's sort of rife with radicalism. But ultimately, the mayor of that town told us that he wasn't there, and so he is still at large. It's feared that he was able to cross back into Belgium from France in a car. And you know, from there, who knows? But there is an international manhunt now to look for him and anyone else who might be connected.
Is there anybody speaking to this? Because I would be curious if he's on the run from ISIS as well, because I thought the mission was do all the damage you can or kill yourself in the process. And he remains alive. I mean, is he going to be hunted by everybody?
You know, who's to say? I think the French clearly want to get him. I'm not sure ISIS has the power, the reach, or the wherewithal to try and do it if they want to. But the French certainly are interested in bringing all of the attackers to justice. They believe there were eight of them. Six detonated their explosive vests and killed themselves. A seventh was shot dead in the street. And Abdeslam is believed to be an eighth gunman, but one of three brothers who were involved, or at least suspected. One of his brothers had been arrested and has since been released.
I think the speed at which they were able to, Aaron, don't you agree? The speed at which they were able to identify them, find who they are, and pursue them, all within 48 hours of these attacks.
It's stunning, but I think it goes to show the urgency. And also there was a small degree of warning. The Iraqis say they let different intelligence agencies know that ISIS was planning something, although there was no specific target and no specific time. But I don't think France was necessarily caught entirely off guard. After Charlie Hebdo, they had really stepped up their anti-terrorism campaign. It just may have been a matter of resources. They couldn't be watching everybody. And a deeper concern is that the that U.S. officials in particular share that they went dark, that they were not communicating on open channels. And that's a concern to anyone in the counterterrorism community.
And isn't it possible that you can know who the criminals are, but you can't take action on them until they commit the crime?
Well, that's part of it, too. And we know that in the U.S. there was a big push before the July 4th holiday to kind of, you know, smoke these people out. And we saw a number of arrests in particular. But there was a real fear that July 4th was a targeted date. Here, it doesn't appear like there was specific warning that it would have happened on Friday night.
Aaron Kuczerski, ABC News. I know you've got to run. Be well.
Thanks very much, Steve.
That's Aaron Kuczerski on the ground in Paris. So imagine if you're French security, the equivalent of Homeland Security in France, and you've got a watch list, and the watch list has as many as 5,000 people who are high risk, and you somehow have to quietly vet and keep an eye on all 5,000. It's impossible.
No, it is impossible. And again, the speed at which they were able to identify them. By the way, too, this raid in Brussels didn't turn up anything. They thought they might find
the brother.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm
not entirely surprised, right? Because the president Hollande closed the
borders.
So how would he have gotten out of the country?
Well,
to Brussels.
Well, that's what he said initially, that he might have had a little bit of a jump. They had a head start, obviously, or he had.
I don't know
start
the geography there. Do we know how long a drive it would be to the nearest Belgium border?
Well,
Mary, you should know.
It's
this.
Connected the French and Belgium border, so he would just have to basically drive over the border.
Right, but I'm just talking about time to get in a car and get there before they close the border.
Yeah, Mayor's right. It's not far. So he definitely had a head start on them.
But he's not there.
He's not at this location in Brussels.
Well, I'm not entirely convinced that he's not on the hiding out from his own people.
That was a great question, by the way, too, because ISIS, their mission, or so we think, is kill and then kill yourself.
Right. So if you didn't deliver,
you don't want to be captured
and somehow
alive.
You've lost your will to take your ultimate reward. By the way, like I have my own version of what heaven is, and it's not theirs.
No.
And there's 72 virgins or whatever the freak show is that they try to portray. My hope is that the only one they greet in heaven is Vic Tayback, the former cook from Alice. It's 8:49. It's time for your traffic. Mary's back on 720 WGN. O'clock hour sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. Part of the story of last week and of ISIS is that 43 people were killed in Beirut, Lebanon, and that they should never be forgotten either. And it's just more of the atrocities by these cowards at ISIS. More than 200 were injured in the process. But there's one man in particular whose story needs to be told. His name is Adel Termos, and he took on one of the twin suicide bombers and sacrificed his own life, but gave time for others to run and save maybe hundreds. A local blogger told a local broadcaster the story that Termo actually tackled the second suicide bomber and drove him to the ground, laid on top of him, essentially in the midst of tackling him. And when the bomb went off, he was killed. Termo was killed. The suicide bomber obviously died, but many others were saved. There are many families, hundreds of families that owe their completeness to his sacrifice. His name is Adel Termos. He saved hundreds of lives in Beirut, Lebanon. His wife is mourning his loss, as are his children, but the man is truly an incredible hero, and that's part of the story from Beirut, Lebanon last week as well. It's 8:57. We're back with the news at the top. Coach Q still to come, the Blackhawks replay of the win last night, and Peter Greenberg on how all of this affects your travel plans before 10 at Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN.
I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Coach Q standing by. The Blackhawks getting it done last night. Well, the Blackhawks replay here in just a few minutes, so you can enjoy that. But in the meantime, that's the Who, and that means Coach Q joins us now. Sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
How great was it to have Dunk back?
Yeah, it was very nice. Good weekend. Him and Rosie coming into our lineup, you could just feel the enthusiasm pick up. The energy level was high, and a real big win in St. Louis. Very competitive game, and then Kelly played well last night again. So his return was, meant a lot to our team, and good to see him back out there and logged significant minutes and does his regular thing.
I don't know that there's a better 1-2 goalie punch in the league right now either. I mean, Darling looked great last night. Didn't get a chance to play in the Madhouse very often, but he looked great. And obviously, Crow had a good night against St. Louis for the most part. So, it's a pretty good, pretty solid back there.
I thought it was a great weekend for the goalies. Scott Darling had his best game of the year last night, needed win. And we go on a road trip now with both goalies doing good in some tough buildings and important games as well. And so it'll be and that win in St. Louis certainly helps ail some of our problems, which was winning on the road. And hopefully that gives us some confidence in knowing that we have to play a certain way. And that's the recipe we're looking for going into Edmonton to start. But it'll be a fun trip all the way around.
I'm telling you, Kane and Panarin are as hot as it could get right now. Kane is in such a groove. I mean, the puck must look like a manhole cover now because he's just getting it done from everywhere.
Well, he really is. He's playing great. The puck follows either one of those guys around. And, every shift, they touch it. They control the play. It's in the other team's end. They're a threat. They beat guys one-on-one. They make tremendous passes between each other. And then you complement Artie in the middle with those two guys. It's a, it's a special line so far for us. And, but they're all playing very well. They're all individually bringing us a little bit something different to the line. And Kaner's patient level with the puck is as high as anybody in the game, and he seems like he has it a lot. So it really, really does play well with our team game's all about.
Joel, how about the play of your third line last night? I know that they don't have the spectacular numbers that the line with Kane and Panarin has put up there so far, but it seemed like they gave you some pretty important shifts.
I thought they had two good games in a row, just like Johnny's line had scoring in the two games, so that's all of a sudden something we hadn't seen all year. I mean, it was pretty amazing that one line did all our scoring through 15 or 16 games, and now that we got scoring from other lines, it's such a difference to our team game. So hopefully that can continue, and we don't have to rely on those guys each and every night to do the scoring for us, and we get some offensive zone time from the other guys too. It'll really help our team game. But that line with Shark, Krugs, and Table was pretty good in both games, with all of them doing a little bit something different, like we just talked about with Artie's line. So good stretch now. Now we got two games in a row where we like the lines, we like the rotation, and hopefully we can continue to improve.
This road trip last year was a very good one for your team. And I know a lot of people went back and looked at it later and said, it started, I think, with a win in Calgary, as a matter of fact, and you had that big lopsided win in Edmonton. Can you look at a trip like this and say, okay, this will kind of maybe help to galvanize a team and kind of get you going in the right direction?
It seems like this is always an important trip for us. We go on it. It looks like, ooh, this could be your make or break party of the year. And we seem to do relatively well on it. I think there's a nice little break there. A couple of days, organization treats us very well. We get to spend a couple of days in Vegas. I think the players appreciate that. So we go into Western Canada, try to, get some momentum going into the next three games in California, going into Thanksgiving. So it's kind of got two different feels to it. Try to break it down in two little three-game road trips and a little fun in the middle. So hopefully that's the case, but I feel that there's some consistency. Guys have a purpose behind it, and at the end of it all, you finish off with two real tough back-to-back games, and hopefully it's a good ending.
Not that this is going to change anytime soon, but would you prefer not to have this circus road trip? Does it mess with the plan, or are you used to it now?
Very accustomed to it now. It's almost like expected. I never had it before, so it was since I've been in Chicago, we've been it's there, and it's a tough challenge, but at the end of the day, I think we've it's been I don't want to say touch wood, but certainly let's keep it going.
Were you a circus fan as a kid in Windsor? Did you ever go over the bridge into Detroit to the circus?
I don't think I ever went to the circus as a kid, but I've taken the kids a couple times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got a favorite. What's your favorite animal? What's your favorite circus animal?
I like tigers.
Yeah, I thought tigers are lions.
I think lions, right? He's the Lion King.
Yeah, because you're the Lion King, so I thought lions.
Yeah, right. You set it up perfectly, and I missed it.
Yeah. Are you a pet guy? Do you guys have dogs and critters and stuff at the house?
Yeah, we have two dogs and a cat. It's never a dull moment here in the animal land here. It's busy.
And is the type of thing with every dad where you end up walking the dog?
Not so much walk the dogs, but there's some chores with the dogs you got to do. I just usually let them out the back or the front, and they're good to go for a while. But you got to feed them, you got to do this, you got to do that, but they're great animals and we love them, they're kind of spoiled too.
Well, you and I are about the same age, and I love dogs. I haven't had a dog for a couple years now, but here's my problem, Coach. Maybe you could coach me up on this. I don't have a fence, and I don't feel like picking up the dog's the dog dump. And my theory is, until the dog can pick up after me, I'm not picking up after it.
So you're good to go.
Well, so big. How great would it be though to see Coach Q walking a dog in the neighborhood?
It's a great neighborhood. There's dogs everywhere. I just thought this morning there was these two ladies that had three dogs each. It was unbelievable. It was the herd going down the street. There's eight of them out there having a good time out there.
But you got a real dog, right? You don't have like a little chihuahua or one of those starter kits, do you?
Well, you got to be careful what you're talking about with dogs. Some people take this personally here.
Have we met? You know how concerned I get about that. But what kind of dog do you have?
We have two dogs, a yellow lab, and one we just got from rescue shelter. And
it's a mutt.
I don't know. It might be like got a little doodle in it. So I don't know what it is.
Got a little doodle in it. It just made my day hearing you say that out loud. All right, so you're going to help me out with something, if you don't mind, real quickly, and you can do this off the air. Don't answer the question on the air. Answer it off the air with Kev. But we're going to give away some tickets here in a second. We want to know what your favorite meal is. That's it. Just off the air, tell Kev what your favorite meal is, what's your go-to meal, what's the one you like to have. And the first person to guess that correctly, 312-981-7200, will be winning some tickets, and I'll tell you about it in just a second. But before you go, Coach, we have prepared. We have a bunch of theme songs for everybody on the show. Everybody gets a song. This has been a long time coming. I'm going to put you on hold so you can hear this. Don't hang up. But here is the Coach Q song from John DeCuss.
He was born and bred in Windsor, they call Ontario. From Spitfires to Skipjacks, his legend starts to grow. The Maple Leafs, his first club, drafted as a pro. That back check defenseman, watch that mustache go. Played for Colorado, Devils, Whalers, Caps. Several teeth are missing, the mustache hides the gaps. He wins now as a head coach, he's tough but always fair. That third place all time wins, but most wins with lip hair. He's a Blackhawk wizard, you can't think that's a pup. A Blackhawk legend. In 5 years, wins three cups.
It's not the Coach Joe Quinn Bill.
That's Coach Q.
I'll talk with Joe right now.
I mean, come on. Come on. How great is that?
Who did that?
Oh, great is that? It's my friend John DeCuss. He's the musical director on the show here. How great is that?
That is classic.
We are going to send that to you. We're going to send that to you so you can play it for the family.
Perfect.
All right, buddy. All right. All the best. All right, have a great road trip. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. See you later. That is great.
That was excellent.
That may be my favorite.
That is, without a doubt, my second favorite.
That could be my favorite.
I mean, I love the way he worked in all of the
It was
teams.
Great. Did you get his favorite meal or did he hang up?
Watch that mustache go.
I love the mustache.
I was so wrapped up in
the
song, I forgot to have him give the answer.
That's funny.
You know what? Text Rogo and see if you can get it from him. Yeah. That was great. John DeCoste, well done. I mean, all the John DeCoste songs are great.
Oh,
but that may be
epic.
That's a lot. That's layered. That's produced. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's got the background vocals going, too. Yeah. Cool.
You think John DeCoste is like one of the Foo Fighters and we didn't know or something?
I think he's just weird.
I know, but I had the Dr. Most song going through my head last week. I could not get rid of it.
The edema on my thigh part.
My
thigh.
I mean,
I know, it's catchy.
By the way, we're going to do a best of John DeCoste album. That we'll put out for New Year's Eve for a Russ and Lauren Cochran Foundation.
Oh, is that what it's going to be for? Yeah, does John know that?
Yeah, what's John's idea?
Okay.
And John will be in tomorrow to, I think, do another tune for Tuesday, or else just take all the accolades for the Coach Q song.
So is that John's shower gift now? Baby gift? Because that kind of makes all of us look bad.
Could be. Yeah, could be. Could be.
So are my gift card to... Bye bye, babies.
No,
not
your
looking
stuff
so
was
good
great.
Anymore.
Your stuff was great. Stop it. They had a great time. It's 9:22. Hope you like the Coach Q song. We'll take a break and come back and get you the Hawks replay in a second. Seventh caller to correctly guess what Coach Q loves for dinner will be a big winner. But we don't know the answer yet, do we, Kevin?
No, I'm just trying to. I'm going to call him right back.
All right, call him back. Call him back.
John Weiderman had just called in. I'm sorry. I was talking to him off the air. He says he loves this song and he wants to start every broadcast with it.
Why not? And thanks to John Weideman, best play-by-play in hockey. Nobody's close. 9:22, more in a moment, 720 WGN.
You're listening to Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
At 9:39, the horror of what happened last week, to be continued in the Middle East and Lebanon and beyond. And, of course, the Russian jetliner that was down was punctuated Friday night by the disaster in Paris. And the cowards of ISIS continuing to perpetrate their murderous ways around the world. What does it mean for your international travel? What does it mean for travel in general? Look, anytime I have travel issues, I call Peter Greenberg and I go, Peter, help us. Peter, won't you help us?
I'm going to do my best. I mean, the real problem here is how governments can get their arms around websites and apps that have essentially been encrypted and allow these guys to talk without being monitored properly by the intelligence services. And then, of course, you're dealing with, you know, getting up to that threshold moment of at what point do you violate everybody's civil rights in the pursuit of trying to stop these guys. So that's a big challenge for the intelligence community right now. But what you will see in the short term, as you know, late Friday night, France closed its borders. Those are its land borders, not its air borders.
Right.
Flights continue to go to Paris. And those land borders will be open because it's just inevitable. You have to maintain traffic and, you know, the economy has to thrive. But what you're going to start seeing now is a change in the approach in the European Union countries. And what I mean by that, Steve, is this. Right now, if you're a member of the European Union and you have a European Union passport from a European Union country, when you're traveling between those countries, they just do a cursory look at your passport and you get waved right in. There's no stamp. There's no double-checking a database. Consider that over. They're going to have to start putting those rules back into place.
And that means slower transfer times.
Absolutely, especially between countries as a European Union passport holder. As a U.S. passport holder, you're going to get the same scrutiny that you've gotten before. Then they're going to have to do something in the wake of the Russian airliner, and that is this. You and I both remember back immediately after 9/11, they had something called positive bag matching,
yep,
which meant that you could not check in on a flight in the U.S., or anywhere else in the world, presumably, and then not get on that plane and have your bags travel anyway.
Right.
And you and I were both, I'm sure we all had that experience where we sat on a plane longer than we should have on the ground while they removed somebody's bags who did not show up for the flight.
Correct.
That's a great idea. Is it still being practiced? Guess what? Not much. And I will bet you my entire career there was no positive bag matching in Sharm el-Sheikh. So what you're going to see now, those days are going back into force. It's a good idea. It needs to happen.
And in Sharm el-Sheikh, where is that investigation at, and what do we think we know, or what do we know we know?
This is what we know we know. We know that the tail broke off and was found 3 miles away from the rest of the debris field. There are only two possible explanations for that. One is that an external item happened or an internal item happened. They quickly determined that it was not external based on the way the metal was bent. So now they've got to look at internal. And here's what they did. As gruesome as this sounds, they did a positive seat match for everybody who was on that plane traveling in the last four rows of that plane. Because that's where, if there was a bomb, it would have been in the cargo hold. And then they concentrated their first autopsies on those bodies. And guess what they found? Lots of metal fragments embedded in those bodies, which could only lead you to believe there was a bomb on board, and that's what they're looking for right now.
There's no way that that could have been accomplished without inside help, right?
Well, somebody had to have access to the plane. So therefore, based on that definition, the answer is yes.
And what does that tell you for travel in that area of the world? Too dangerous to take in general?
No, right now it's probably the best place in the world to travel because the focus is there. As politically insensitive as this sounds, I've always believed, and you and I have talked about this before, that the best time for anybody to go anywhere is after a natural disaster, yep, a civil disturbance, or an act of terrorism, because the odds of it happening there again are, you know, reduced almost exponentially.
Right, and that goes to the question about Paris. As things slowly open this week and memorials go on, you know, and we're a week down the road, what do we know? We know hotels are going to be cheaper. We know there'll be less people traveling.
You know what? This is not an opportunity to look for discounts.
But am I wrong about that? I mean, that's a general theory that always seems to play into these things, especially in a tourism area.
It does for about the first 36 hours in certain places that are immensely popular, like France. And the bottom line is, if you take a look at all of those European capitals, whether it's active terrorism, whether it was London or Madrid or now Paris, they bounce back very, very quickly. They're amazingly resilient. And so this is not an opportunity to do anything other than support them by going there.
Right. Right. So if you planned on going, you shouldn't change your plans.
Absolutely.
Now, there is risk, obviously. We know that there's risk in country. There's risk everywhere. But there is risk because of the nature of the suburban population and the 5,000 or so identified radicalized Muslims there. But, you know, look, you risk getting up in the morning, too. So you got to live your life, don't you?
You know, here's my metric, as crazy as it sounds. People always ask me, where would I go and where would I not go? The only places I wouldn't go is when I don't know who's in control. So would I go to Syria right now? No. Would I go to parts of Chechnya and the Congo right now? No. Would I go to northern Iraq? Yes, I know who's in control. Would I go to North Korea? Yeah, I know who's in control. As long as you know who's in control and you can adjust to their customs, their style, and their protocols, you should have no trouble going anywhere. It's when nobody's in control, don't you dare go there.
All right, we've only got a couple of minutes, so we can't really do the rest of this you know, fairly. But having said that, I'd be lax in my duties here, as described by the people that hired me, if I didn't say this. If we want to travel for the holiday, is there something we need to do, or is it too late already?
Well, for all of you procrastinators, if you're talking about the Thanksgiving holiday, remember, for every day starting in September that you waited to buy your ticket, that ticket fare went up on an average of about $8 a day. So you're going to spend a lot more money. And the old secrets I used to give people, like only travel on Thanksgiving morning, well, that secret's out of the bag. There are not that many discounts left for Thanksgiving. What I would suggest you do otherwise, and I know you and I have talked about this before, is embrace Thanksgiving the way I do. It's an obligatory dysfunctional family get-together. And what you should do is take the kids out of school the following week, embrace the notion of extra credit from their teachers, and travel the dead week, the week immediately following Thanksgiving. That's where the deals are. No lines, great service, great deals, and you'll come back without having to mortgage your house.
And is there a chance that you'll be able to get any sort of acceptable fare for Christmas?
Yes, and the reason for that is because if you take a look at when Christmas hits, there's not just that Wednesday before Thanksgiving that's going to kill you. You can spread it out. You can bookend it in such a way that you can find holes. And there are a number of different apps out there that will help you do that, to find out the best day to book that will get around those blackouts.
So stop procrastinating. Get on it. And just know that it's a space available sort of thing, and there's still less space than ever, right?
Correct.
All right. It's Peter Greenberg. Where in the world are you today?
Today I'm in Tampa, Florida, doing a piece for my television show, and then heading back to New York at the end of the week.
And is everything Peter Greenberg run through the website still? All of the empire?
Still, it's still petergreenberg.com, and we update that every 18 hours. It's not a transactional site. It's all informational, so anybody can sign up and get it for free.
And nobody can buy off Peter Greenberg. Trust me, I've tried. All the best, my friend. Thank you.
Anytime, Mr. C.
9:47. More in a moment on 720 WGN. I want to remind you that I have written a blog about the situation we find ourselves in the world. I called it the Frequently Asked Questions of Crazy. And it goes through everything related to this story, at least that we know it so far, starting with Friday night in Paris and ISIS, and even why we use the words ISIS, ISIL, and now Daesh as well. So you can check that out on Twitter at Cochran Show, on Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, and hit the blogs button at WGNRadio.com or the WGN Radio app. I would also encourage you to look at the post from Isabel Bodery, a 22-year-old woman from Cape Town, South Africa, that was posted by her. She is one of the survivors of the Bactalan disaster. And after talking about how scared she was and what she went through, the entire post is linked through our social media as well. But here's how she finishes it. And keep in mind, this is a girl who's 22 years old who survived but had death all around her and had to pretend she was dead. She's thanking many people, and then she says, most of this is to the 80 people who were murdered inside that venue, who weren't as lucky as I am, who didn't get to wake up today, and to all the pain that their friends and families are going through. I am so sorry. There's nothing that will fix it. I feel privileged to be there for their last breaths, and truly believing that I would join them, I promise that their last thoughts were not on the animals who caused all of this. It was thinking of the people that they loved, as I did, as I lay down in the blood of strangers and waiting for my bullet to end my mere 22 years. I envisioned every face that I ever loved and whispered, I love you, over and over again, reflecting on the highlights of my life, wishing that those I love knew just how much, and wishing that they knew no matter what happened to me, to keep believing in the good of people and not to let those men win. That night, the lives of many were forever changed, and it's up to us to be better people, to live lives that the innocent victims of this tragedy dreamt now but sadly will not ever be able to fulfill. R.I.P. angels, you'll never be forgotten. And I challenge you, if you can get through this without crying, yeah, you're a colder person than I am.
Right. That's just so moving.
I cannot believe a 22-year-old, let alone a 22-year-old that went through that, could come up with the words that she came up with.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's really amazing. Wendy's flying without Bill this week. I got, it's probably a good break for you.
That's a good break for him.
Yeah, it's a good break for you.
Yes, he's taking this week off. And we are going to have fun despite just immersing myself in all that Paris stuff over the weekend. Weren't you just watching everything?
Nonstop.
You had to until you had to get away from it, right? Eventually you had to walk away.
Yeah,
at least we had some good sports this weekend.
Plenty of that. And I don't know if you heard, the Bears may have won.
How about that?
Crazy.
I'm telling you.
Crazy.
There's a time-space continuum going on. As soon as Ditka put on that Packers jersey, the Packers started losing, the Bears started winning.
Yes. You know why?
That's so do we thank him?
Super agent Steve Mandel's an evil genius. He created this whole thing.
I'll tell you, Ditka was dead to me when he put that on. But now he's not so dead to me because the Bears are winning.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. Super agent Steve Mandel asked me to wear Eric's pants of Eric and Kathy. So I think it's kind of the same thing. I don't know what it is. Now, they don't fit. They're very snug.
Well, skinny jeans are lame anyway.
here's Wendy.